This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman. And you're listening to the DCAU Review, hosted by Cal and Liam, streaming at DCAUReview.com and on your favorite podcast app.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Gotham City is out of control.
An entire city screaming in fear.
Supervillains walk the streets, preying on the innocent.
They will learn the true nature of harm.
The police are powerless. A creature prowls this urban wasteland.
Who's that?
He moves in darkness. For some, he is a rumor. A name whispered in the corridors of the underworld, waiting for the chance to strike. Let every criminal know the acid taste of fear.
You crazy!
A bat! Giant bat!
Gotham has forgotten what justice means. The Dark Knight is here to remind them. Batman. Good guys wear black.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 240 of the DCAU Review. I am one of your two hosts, Cal, and with me, as he always is, my good brother, the man that runs our Twitter account. That's right, it's Liam. Liam, welcome to a very special holiday edition of the DCAU Review, episode 240. You know, we were talking before we went on the air. They say that when you've hit the 240th edition of your podcast, that you're truly made men at that point, or made people. So here we are. They are saying that.
That's right. Many, many people are saying this. Mm-hmm. But yeah, 240, nothing to sneeze at. But yeah, it's a great episode. Every year we have tried, since our show started some 5 years ago, right around this time, in fact. Mm-hmm. We'll do our last episode of the year will be on our 5 year anniversary. So that's a neat bit of symmetry later this month. We always try to work in a holiday themed review. And while the holiday season doesn't factor greatly into our episode today, it is still set during that time of year. So this is one of those annoying internet arguments. is this a Christmas episode? Is this a holiday episode? You can argue with that, along with, you know, Die Hard and Iron Man 3 and Batman Returns and whatever else annoying people talk about this time of year. But yes, we are in fact talking about the absolute classic episode, that being A Bullet for Bullock. Dakota December came to an end a couple of weeks early as we had to head home for the holidays here and cover this episode.
There we go. Absolutely. It does feel warm and cozy here in Gotham City, right where it all started, as you mentioned, nearly 5 years ago. So only fitting that we are back here with Batman the Animated Series for our 240th edition of the pod. And Liam, as you mentioned, we will be covering that episode today, as usual, with our four normal categories and ratings and a final score at the end. But before then, what we are going to do, of course, is get our official IMDb Internet Movie Database synopsis, the official one, that is, for this week's episode, which originally aired. Now, this is interesting because we talked about this also before we went on the air, but this episode is technically an Adventures of Batman and Robin episode, not Batman the Animated Series, right?
Correct, because while it comes much earlier in the production order of the series, before those later Adventures of Batman and Robin episodes were produced, it did not air until it's actually the next to last episode of this series to air on Fox Kids. So this one technically gets grandfathered in to the Adventures of Batman and Robin, even if it's technically was produced to be part of this second season of original recipe Batman the Animated Series.
Well, there you have it. Thus the absence of Robin in the Adventures of Batman and Robin. So, go figure. But yes, this one didn't air until September the 14th, 1995. Not very holiday centric, let me just say that, to be airing this episode in the middle of September, but such was the case with many of the holiday themed episodes. But again, we just passed the 27 year anniversary of this episode's debut. And now, Liam, I will throw it over to you for the official IMDb synopsis brought to you by The Pod Tower. Head over to youtube.com/The Pod Tower to check out our entire library, including past Christmas and holiday themed episodes, including Christmas with the Joker and Comfort and Joy. Some great episode reviews there, plus a Batman Brave and the Bold holiday themed episode as well. All available at youtube.com/The Pod Tower.
Absolutely. So this is the synopsis for A Bullet for Bullet, which is written by Michael Reeves and directed by Frank Parr, with music by Harvey Cohen and animation by Studio Junio. We should note here, this is also, this story is heavily inspired by Detective Comics number 651, which was written by Chuck Dixon with art by Graham Nolan. And with all of those names out of the way, we have a synopsis that reads as such. Detective Bullock reluctantly asks for Batman's assistance when he is convinced someone is trying to kill him.
Okay. That short to the point. Yeah. Didn't drag on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, it gets the job done. It's not a run on sentence, and it doesn't say things that happen in the episode that don't actually happen. So, grading on the IMDb synopsis curve, I think this is like a solid B+, maybe even an A-.
Yeah, I agree. So let's get in with our plot synopsis here as we open up the episode. Harvey Bullock is walking home in the snow in a snow-covered Gotham City late at night, and we realize very quickly that this is going to be a very Harvey Bullock-centric episode, as Bullock is attempting, just before, to head into his apartment. There appears to be somebody in a ski mask that is watching him, that revs the engine of their car up and attempts to run him over. And he narrowly misses after Bullock then turns and fires at the car that attempted to run him over. But the driver escapes, and Bullock is sort of left there concerned just as what is going on. And we learn it's shaken him up so badly that he's turned to the one man that he frequently downplays as an important part of Gotham City's war against crime, of course, lighting up the bat signal and drawing Batman to the GCPD in order to have a discussion with Batman.
Commissioner?
Nope. Me. I got a problem.
And you want my help?
Let's get something straight from the get-go. I think you're a freak and a menace, and those are your good points. But the commish says you serve a purpose, so I go along.
I appreciate your honesty. What's the problem?
Somebody's got an infamy. Tried to give me a fender massage last night. It ain't the first time. Last week, too.
Any suspects?
So many they could have their own zip code. I put a lot of guys away and they hate me for it. Looks like one of them hates me enough to do something about it.
Why me? Why not just go to the department?
I step on a lot of toes. I don't want internal affairs looking at me too close. They might find some things I don't want found.
Are you on the take?
Watch it, freak! I never took a dime from nobody. I just bend the rules a little sometimes. You understand? We're not all that different.
We're on the same side, but we're not the same.
I already love this part of the episode. Like, Bulk is so shaken by the fact that somebody, he's a cop. He's clearly used to people trying to kill him. But whatever it is, this case has him so worked up. And we learn in his discussion with Batman that it's not the norm. Someone's been sending him death threats. there have been multiple incidents prior to this where somebody's trying to kill him, and it's shaken him up so badly, Liam, that he's turned to the one man that he despises and feels like is sort of antithetical to what his role in Gotham City is, for help. And it's where the jumping off point for our episode kind of goes from here.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's great because we immediately, as to your point, this is seemingly going against almost every appearance we've had in this series to this point, with Bullock almost always being at odds with Batman, and not wanting him involved in police business. And so Batman kind of just point blank asks him why he would ask for his help given their history together. And Bullock makes it clear that he does not want the police department, specifically internal affairs, looking too closely at his case files for fear that there might be some damaging info in there. Batman, this is one of these things where, and we talk about this all the time, and we'll get to it a little bit later too, but like, this is on a children's show in Fox 40, on Fox Kids on like a Wednesday afternoon. And Batman is asking a cop if he's dirty.
Are you on like the tape? Watching, he like shakes like him down.
Right. Like we're watching The Departed in animated form. It's amazing. Like, yeah. Don't get me wrong. It's not a negative. And it's one of the strengths of the show, as we've talked about a million times, of their sort of refusal to talk down to their audience, even though they knew the audience was predominantly made up of children.
Right.
But here, yes. So, but Bullock makes it clear that while he's never taken a dime from anybody, he's not that kind of dirty cop, that there may be, you know, a few times that he's bent the rules and looked the other way and maybe done things without a warrant or something. And he doesn't want to give internal affairs a reason to look too closely at him for fear it could hurt him in the long run. So he gets Batman to agree to help, somewhat reluctantly, and he gives him a file, a floppy disk, which is how you know this was made in 1992.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It fits with the retro aesthetic now.
It does. It does. Yeah. It was actually modern technology at the time, but right. Yes.
Yeah.
But yes, it should have been microfilm or something, I guess, to go with the 30s. But now it works. Now it's sufficiently retro. Mm-hmm. So Batman takes it and agrees to help Bullock, even though he's still not quite sure what to make of it. And as we go forward here, we see Bullock returning to his apartment, and we get his first interaction with his kind of overbearing landlord, who's yelling at him about, you know, leaving the heat on when he's not in the apartment. Roaches. That was garbage.
Yep.
Yes. He's furious at him, and Bullock just completely blows him off and tells him to tells him where he can stick it in no uncertain terms.
There's a doormat outside, Mr. Bullock.
Really? I thought you were the doormat around here, Nivens. Don't crowd me, Dork, or I'll wipe my feet on you.
Take out your garbage once in a while. Your apartment stinks. I won't have roaches in my building. And turn the heat down when you're out all day!
Happy holidays, Nivens.
In the meanwhile, we cut back to the Batcave, where Batman and Alfred are sort of discussing Bullock's history and going over all of these names. And as Batman is letting the algorithm run its magic to try to figure out who might be on these files that could potentially be out of prison and have a grudge against Bullock, Batman decides he's not done for the evening and heads back out, saying that he believes that Bullock is going to need a guardian angel. And that is in fact the case, as we cut to Bullock and Montoya, who are doing some kind of bust in this old rundown building. Apparently they had knocked over these thugs had knocked over a bank on Christmas, in fact, they say, I believe. And as there's kind of a shootout and a little bit of a chase, Bullock heads up to a roof where he looks like the thug is going to have the drop on him. But thankfully, Batman's there to save the day. And it's clear here Batman's sort of starting to figure out that maybe not all is as it seems. And he begins to wonder aloud as to why exactly if these people wanted Bullock dead, why they'd why they send him a note trying to get him out of town first. So they're, so Batman's kind of starting to pull at the threads. We haven't quite figured out what our mystery is here yet. Mm-hmm. But as Batman follow up and ask Bullock some, Bullock kind of blows him off and tells him they can talk later.
Questions, remember?
Sheesh! You take some chances, freak.
Are these all the threats you received?
Yeah. I'm thinking of starting a scrapbook.
You dusted them for prints?
Yep. Nada. Hand delivered to my mailbox.
Someone's gone to a lot of effort to scare you, but I don't think they're trying to kill you.
Yeah? That attack last night seemed pretty sincere.
A professional hitman would do you here, not on the street.
So what? Guy who gets whacked by an amateur is just as stiff as a pro job. When are you going to get me that list of names? I wonder how Gordon puts up with this.
Yeah, that's right. So after Batman rescues and saves Bullock from nearly getting killed and Bullock not being very grateful at all with Batman sticking his nose, continuing to stick his nose in police business, as he says, they decide to meet up again later, as you mentioned, and Batman shows up at Bullock's apartment, nearly scaring Bullock half to death. Bullock pulls out his gun and nearly shoots him. And yeah, this is where Batman is sort of reading over these death threats that Bullock has received. And that's where he begins to sort of guess that maybe this isn't somebody that Bullock has encountered in his past. But Bullock sort of maintains that line that it has to be somebody. So Batman begins asking additional questions about, you know, if there's anybody that he can think of that in particular that could be out to get him. But Batman is insistent that it's odd that this culprit tried to kind of kill him out on the street in the open air, and that if it was truly a hitman or somebody that was well connected enough to hire a hitman, they would have killed Bullock right in his apartment. Bullock again is still not convinced. So we flash as Bullock sort of continue or parts ways with Batman. Batman parts ways and says he's going to continue in the investigation. And Bullock goes out on his next shift and he's out buying donuts. He decides to walk down into the subway station underground and he's sitting there chowing down on some donuts. And wouldn't you know, out of nowhere, someone pushes him from behind onto the train tracks, nearly into an oncoming train as Bullock is able to just evade the oncoming train. But and as he gets up off of the tracks and back onto the platform, of course, the person that shoved him is no longer there. So Bullock is clearly at this point very, very disturbed by this as they cut to his hand sitting at his desk and he's shaking. And Montoya happens to notice that he's a little shaken up and asking him if he would be willing to share what's going on. And Bullock sort of plays it off and shoos her away and says that he doesn't have any plans for in between he doesn't have any plans for New Year's because he's doing the same thing that he did on Christmas. That's where we learn where this takes place in the timeline. So there you go. He's doing laundry for New Year's just like he did for Christmas. So I guess that answers the question. What are you doing on New Year's Eve? Right.
That's right. So we get that. And as they sort of go their separate ways, Batman comes into the room, as you mentioned, and lets Bullock know this Vincent Starkey is apparently someone who Bullock took down. He was kind of a high ranking mob boss that Bullock had taken down. So Batman goes out to hit the streets to look for some information while Bullock takes a different route. And that brings us to maybe my favorite of the whole, which is he ends up going, we cut to Bullock going to see Summer Gleason at the news studios, presumably. And it's clear, and this is just another fun little weird wrinkle that I think makes the world feel a little more lived in, mm-hmm. which is there's clearly like a ton of history between Bullock and Gleason of him sort of leaning on her and maybe pressuring her to give up sources for various stories she's done, and she's clearly just sick of it. And I mean, I guess really the theme of it is that everybody hates Bullock in this episode, and he's mostly a bad person.
Right.
That's kind of the theme of the episode, but we see him again, you know, begging Summer Gleason to help, and at first she's very reluctant to, but finally she tells him that if he can give her an hour, she'll try to come up with something for him. And he seemingly agrees to that, but as he's walking out of the studio, he notices that Summer's office door is right there, and decides rather than wait for Summer to maybe bring him some information, he's going to search for it himself. From there, we just cut to a straight up drug deal. There's a man getting a handful of cash and handing another guy a tiny little baggie of something. And the drug dealer doesn't get a name, but he is sufficiently sinister. Certainly, we'll talk more about that in visuals, perhaps. But Batman swoops the dealer and swings him up to a building and begins to threaten him and ask about Vinny the Shark, who the dealer initially kind of tries to pretend he doesn't know who that is or doesn't work for him anymore. But Batman gets a little creative with his interrogation by not just almost dropping him off of a building and catching him with the grapple at the last, but also as he's hanging a couple of inches from the ground, here comes a giant semi truck flying towards him. So after that little bit of gentle persuasion, Batman goes back for round two of interrogation of this guy. And we cut back to Summer Gleason's office, and there's just papers everywhere as Bullock has just torn her office apart looking for info. And Summer walks in and is quite furious with him and tells him to get out, and basically says she doesn't care if he dies. So it's just tremendous bit. Like I don't know where this could have fit in another episode, but after this episode, I was like, good God, would I have loved to have seen more interactions between Bullock and Summer, because this was so much fun.
Aren't you a piece of work?
You gotta help me, Gleason. I need to find Vinny the Shark.
You want to find a shark? You can jump in Gotham Bay. You've blown it big time, Bullock. Don't ever come to me again.
Summer, cut me some slack. This guy's looking to whack me.
Look on the bright side. You'll make the 6 o'clock news.
Ah.
The rivalry. The utter disdain that she has for him. I love that she initially was like, she might help him out. She was thinking about it, but you know, she held over the fact that he still owed her from a past favor, and you know, and then she just walks in on him and just he's utterly destroyed her office. I just absolutely love it. And her being so furious that, like you said, she doesn't care what happens to him at this point. And yeah, that's where we meet up next as Bullock tells her good riddance, sort of, and gets back on the street attempting to catch a taxi, and is stood up by a taxi that rides right past him. But luckily for him, right behind the taxi comes the Batmobile, much cooler and safer than a taxi, I'd say, right? So we then get Batman, who's located Vinny the Shark, and decides that he and Bullock are gonna go to the docks, where Vinny, by the way, is pushing, according to Batman, rock crystal. What is happening here?
This is after, by the way, when Bullock is asking Summer about her expose on crack town.
Right. Yeah, it crazy times here. Crazy the things that got through the standards and practices.
I was gonna say, I thought any sort of allusion to drugs or drug paraphernalia was a big no-no in these days on the Fox Kids S&P, but I guess they stuck a couple through here.
Get in.
Hey! You got a serious attitude problem, freak.
You want the shark or not?
You know where he is?
He's running rock crystal out of an abandoned auto plant out in Bayside.
Nice starship you got here. What's this for?
Passenger ejector seat.
There you go. Go figure. So they
they are on their way to visit the docks and crack down on Vinny the Shark. And unfortunately, Bullock and Batman are seen and are approached by Vinny the Shark, and things look to be not sitting so well for our Dark Knight and Harvey, as they are both trapped with surrounded by the gang, Vinny's gang, and Vinny says he's going to finish the job at this point. He's held this grudge because Harvey sent him up the river for 8 years, and he's going to finish the job at this point. He's going to relish it.
8 years I waited to do this, Bullock. Now it's payback time.
Of course, just before the thugs are able to wipe out the Dark Knight, he deploys some tear gas, which begins choking and coughing and incapacitating the gang, as both Bullock and Batman take down the gang one by one. And that leaves Vinny the Shark to attempt to get away. And Vinny stumbles into a long dark hallway that has no exit. So he's pretty much run into a dead end at this point, and Bullock pursues him and manages to pick up a pistol and begins pointing it at him and says he's reached the end of the line. And Batman interrupts just before Bullock appears to be ready to take care of Vinny the Shark. But Bullock assures him that he was going to do no such thing, that he's prepared to take Vinny in, and he's just glad at this point that this whole situation has ended. And Batman again questions whether or not he feels that this is actually the person that wanted him dead, and Bullock said it has to be. And we get a scene cut from here to an interrogation room, which has Bullock and Detective Montoya, amongst a few others, shaking down Vinny, demanding answers for why he would send him those notes, and begging him to pretty much confess and admit that he was the one behind the whole thing. And he Vinny does not give in. He continues to claim ignorance and not know what Bullock is speaking of. And even as Bullock grabs him by the lapels and begins shaking him, he insists that he doesn't have a clue what he's talking about and he needs to get lost.
Okay, Vinny. They say confession's good for the soul. You want to tell me why you sent me those letters?
You've taken one too many shots to the head, Bullock. What letters?
Listen, scumface, I don't feel like playing games. I got a pile of paperwork and internal affairs is all over me like a cheap suit, so spill it!
What are you gonna do? Send me to jail? I'm telling you, I don't know what you're talking about!
Get him out of here. It's just gotta be him, Montoya. There ain't nobody else.
We have a final shot of Bullock kind of walking back down the street as he's headed into his apartment. And just as he's walking up the steps to his apartment, wouldn't you know it, the man in the ski mask that we saw in the very first scene has Bullock pretty much dead to rights. He pulls out a gun on him and threatens him, and he tells him he tried to get him to leave town, but he wouldn't listen, but he has no choice at this point. And he's just as he's about to pull the trigger, and we were about to see the end of one Harvey Bullock. Thankfully, Batman swoops in, knocking down this masked man. And as he unmasks him, we see that it is, in fact, spoiler alert for a nearly 30-year-old episode here, it is, in fact, Harvey Bullock's landlord, Nivens, who we saw in the very first couple of scenes that Harvey was sort of dressing down verbally there. So he admits that he's frustrated. He hates Harvey as a tenant and was just tired of him being a tenant in his apartment. He wanted to get him out.
Nivens?
Why wouldn't you move? Why wouldn't you get out? You and your late hours and your filthy habits. Do you have any idea what your apartment's worth these days?
You wanted my apartment? You mean all this was about rent control?
No. I wanted you gone. You're not a tenant. You're a pestilence. You insult me. You treat me like dirt. No jury in the world would have convicted me. They wouldn't have convicted me.
Somebody like Vinny wants to pop me. That's no surprise. But this... You know, it's funny. I was thinking of moving anyway. Neighborhood's really been going downhill lately. Look, I guess I owe you for this.
Forget it, Bullock. You've got enough problems.
We get a fade out, and that's the end of our little episode here.
Yeah, it's a really wacky little finale to the episode. I really enjoyed this. As I guess we can get to start to sum up our full thoughts on the episode now that our synopsis of it is done. I just think this episode's great. There are some minor changes from the comic, which just basic ones, like instead of talking in the episode, Batman's at the Batcave talking to Alfred. In the comic, Robin's there, and then I believe the actual it is Nivens, the landlord, is the villain of the book as well. However, it's solely due to the trying to get Bullock out because his apartment's rent controlled. whereas this one, it's that, and also the overall theme of this episode is that Harvey Bullock is a bad person, and everyone who knows him kind of hates him. And I think that's kind of fun. There's like a real black humor to, I think, this episode because of that. Because yes, even though we have mobsters and you know people pushing Harvey Bullock in front of a train, even you know some of our allies, whether it's Batman himself, whether it's Montoya, whether it's Summer Gleason, you know, these nice regular people, you know, heroes themselves in some cases, and they can't stand the guy. Much less the people he's actually coming to direct conflict with over the years. So I love this guy who he's not necessarily a bad guy, but when someone's trying to kill him, everyone in the city is a suspect. It feels like by the time the episode's over, like I just think that's such a clever way, and the way they sort of compared to the comic, I think they do a better job maybe of showing off with that those two Summer Gleason scenes of just showing that it's not just the criminals and the crooks who don't like Bullock. He's kind of a jerk to everybody. And so it does kind of feel like it almost, not that you think Summer Gleason or Montoya are going to turn out to be the mastermind behind it, but it is a fun little bit there that he just kind of leaves this trail of destruction wherever he goes, just because of who he is as a person.
yeah, he's they do their very, very best to make him a unlikable character. Like they don't really want you to feel all that sorry for him. They are very clear that he's rude, he's, you know, he's messy, he's disgusting, he's arrogant, he's selfish. He's not kind at all. Doesn't seem to have a kind bone in his body. He's not very thankful. He's a schlubby loser kind of guy that on top of it is mean and nasty also. So the fact that they emphasize that as a way to sort of make him a less sympathetic character, but to also sort of throw you off the trail is like, okay, so clearly this guy has so many enemies here. It could literally be anybody. It kind of shines the light on the fact that Batman didn't just zone in on one person. It sort of highlights his detective skills, his willingness to see the clues that are being put together and try and piece together a picture and recognize when a piece doesn't quite fit, which is what he sort of stands with the entire episode. It's this doesn't fit. This doesn't, why this person? Why would it be this person out of all of the people that don't like you? So I love that
that and he's proven right at the end, obviously. So yeah, I love this. It's a fun episode. You know, it really is a episode that features a lot of Bullock, and we'll talk about that later in voice acting, but it's a very Bullock centric episode. There's not a ton of Batman, but there's enough Batman to get some enjoyment out of it. That scene with him interrogating the drug dealers is fantastic. A classic Batman interrogation scene. I think we need a super cut of Batman using the term slime ball. Like it has to have been his highest used insult for the entire series, right? Slime ball. I feel like that's a reused one.
I think so. There's definitely there's like variations on that. Slime ball, scum bucket is one that sticks out in my head. Yeah, there's definitely a recurring one there. So I love the way the plot's laid out with Batman kind of slowly piecing it together even better than Bullock has. And I just think it's fantastic. The one thing I would say I would give the comic credit for is that, and because this is such a, like, and we'll talk about this again in voice acting and certainly in the music in a few moments here, it's such a, you know, they're leaning so hard into the noir detective side of this. You know, of Bullock being the gumshoe walking the beat, and you know, he's out on the streets and it's a dirty city, but somebody's gotta live in it, type of vibe to this. That I kind of wish they had done like a voiceover narration with Bullock.
Yeah,
which that would have been comic, good. which the comic has, and that was kind of that's a very, very small nitpick, but it is something that I think maybe would have really put this into overdrive as far as leaning into that detective noir story. But yeah, overall, I still think it's fantastic and just a great deal of fun. And I ended up selling on a 9 out of 10 for my plot score.
Yeah, I gave it the same exact score. It's fantastic. I'm with you. We saw that sort of plot device used for the late Mr. Kent. And it wasn't one that they did very often where they would have a narrator come over. And I wonder if it was to sort of shy away from the style that the Spider-Man animated series did, which had a lot of voiceover from Peter providing a narrative, or just to differ from maybe not be completely over the top, or maybe just some of the writers didn't like that storytelling device. But I'm with you. That's a great one. That's a great suggestion there. Could have really taken us over the top, but it's hard to nitpick anything else about this episode, because it's based on a really good story, and it was executed really, really well, which clearly is reflected in our scores.
Absolutely.
All right, Lane, let's move on to our next category, which is going to be visuals and animation. And I will say, despite this being a really strong episode, there's a couple of action sequences we get right off the bat. We sort of get our pulses racing a little bit with the idea that Bullock might be assassinated. But and then we have the gun shootout between him and the gang that they're busting. And then we have the Batman shaking down of the drug dealer, and then the fight on the, I guess there's more action here than I thought that there was. I thought this is a pretty light action, but now that I'm saying it, maybe it's just because of the way the story goes and the lulls in between the little action beats there. It's well balanced, but it does feel like it's a heavier story mode than it is an action heavy episode, because I guess because the action beats are pretty quick. It's not long and drawn out. They're pretty quick fights that end up happening.
Yeah, I don't I would tend to agree with you. I think watching it, I was a little surprised. I didn't really remember the sequence with Montoya and Bullock going into the abandoned building and then having the showdown with the guy on Bullock having the showdown with the guy on the roof. I didn't really remember that sequence at all. So yeah, I was a little surprised that there is a good amount of fisticuffs and gunplay throughout this episode. But I think the standouts for me are the quieter moments, though. Again, as we just finished talking about it, it's leaned so heavily on that detective story style and just everything about the setting it in the winter, as we talked about. It's not really Christmas and New Year's isn't really a part of this episode the way it is in, you know, Christmas with the Joker, Holiday Nights, or some of the other episodes we have or will review in the future. But it still has such a, you know, setting it just in the winter, it's cold outside and Bullock's, it just looks like a miserable city. It just looks like this miserable, grimy city, the way that only a major city can look after, you know, there's just like, it's not even like, it's not covered in snow. There's just like little piles, where it's been shoveled and stuff like that. Everything about it, I just think, I love the backgrounds, especially in this episode. You know, it just fits, I think, so well with what they're going for. It is a very muted color palette. Like Batman might be the brightest thing in the episode, you know, the blue on his costume, but for the story they're telling, I think it's just fantastic. And yeah, I think the action sequence with Vinny the Shark and his thugs against Batman and Bullock is a lot of fun. Bullock makes this like ridiculous entrance where he's hanging off of like a crane hook, and then they have like the shell of the car dropped on their heads, and then the fisticuffs that go out from there, I think, are fun. And I think the bit where, you know, it's Bullock standing on the edge of the train platform and he's holding his donuts, and then you just see sort of a silhouette push him out into the train tracks, and then he looks up and he sees the light from the train coming towards him. I think that's pretty fantastic as well. So those were kind of my big highlights for visuals.
Yeah. I will say that there was something that unnerved me a little bit, but I was pleased. There was no way that it was actually true. I was, based on the time frame that this was written and drawn, I would assume. But I will admit that Vinny the Shark gave me a little bit of Jeffrey Epstein vibes. And once I saw it, I could not unsee it for the rest of the episode. Vinny the Shark was actually apparently based on an actual famous actor by the name of Lee Marvin, an Academy Award winning best actor, Lee Marvin, who won an Academy Award back in 1965, according to his Wikipedia page, for a movie with Jane Fonda called Cat Bayou. So go figure. But he was maybe most famous in a movie called The Dirty Dozen, of course, or he did a lot of Westerns, it looks like, and some other films in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. But that apparently is who his look was based on. But it was one of those things where if you look at the character, it's like, this guy is clearly based on somebody. And it's just the hair and the big chin and all of that that gave me Epstein vibes. So unfortunately, modern day, things have led me to see that character looking like that infamous person. But he's actually based on a pretty accomplished actor. So if anyone else saw him as Epstein, don't worry, it's not based on Jeffrey. But yes, as far as the rest of the episode, I'd say I love the snow setting. I love the wintry cold. I also just noticed that, you know, a lot of the episode takes place on the actual streets of Gotham, so we get, you know, it truly felt a little bit like New York City at Christmas time. You see Bullock coming out of the donut shop and going down into the subway tunnel. You know, it was very much a New York-esque feel to me for the way that they sort of captured the essence of that in the artwork this week. But yeah, it's definitely a very dark episode, especially coming off of reviewing Static the last couple of weeks, and even some of the more recent Batman the Animated Series episodes that we've reviewed. This is definitely a darker palette, completely seems to take place completely at nighttime, and we have lots of dark, shadowy places, and Bullock's apartment is even dark, and so we get a lot of that. But I love some of the trick visuals that they did. I love the idea when he opens the door the first time, it looks like there's somebody standing there with a gun, but the light comes on and it's just a pile of roaches scattering across the wall. I loved that. I loved the next scene that we get in Bullock's apartment, where he comes in and again is spooked by a shadow, and we get this point, this long range of him sticking his pistol in at
aiming it at what he assumes is somebody trying to kill him, but is in fact Batman. We get a real long shot of him holding the revolver there. I liked that. I liked the when they dropped the car on them in the final scene there. We get Bullock there sort of sitting in the driver's seat and Batman sitting next to him, and Batman is completely in shadow. You only see the white lenses of the eyes, but Bullock is completely in the light there. I loved that. And I think visually, while the action doesn't seem to last too long, it isn't the main focus of the episode, I do enjoy that final fight as Batman sort of takes out the gang with the tear gas and slipping on his gas mask before he sort of takes them out one by one. A pretty fun visual and a nice little fun scene there, but it's not heavy enough on the action for me to really say this was an outstanding visual episode. I didn't think there was anything that blew me away visually as far as sequences were concerned. So I ended up with a solid, but not top 7 out of 10. What about you?
Yeah, actually, I went just one point higher at 8 out of 10. So this is a, as mentioned, a Frank Parr directed episode. And Studio Junio or Junio is responsible for the animation. They only had done a few other episodes, including, unfortunately, The Underdwellers, Dollar in the Jar. But it's an interesting style because nobody's really, I would say, off model. I think the Bullock model is a little bit inconsistent in it.
Mm-hmm.
Batman's pretty much on model, or at least he's consistent in the episodes, so it didn't bother me as much. Everybody's just a little bit. I thought the Vinny the Shark, and it's hard to say because it's a character that only appears in two scenes of the entire DCAU here. But I feel like his head shape changed a few times in that fight scene. So I could nitpick some things as far as the animation goes with obviously a studio they didn't use very often. It's not exactly fair perhaps to expect the A game you might get from a TMS episode, but overall, yeah, I think very strong visuals overall. The action is fun and well paced, and then, you know, again, the from the background artists and the colorists and everybody who worked on this, I just think it's just every part of this, as we'll get to, helps tell this gritty detective drama that they're going for here. So the visuals were a big part of that.
Yeah, really, really captures the essence and does a great job of adding to the atmosphere of the episode. Totally, totally agree with you on that one. All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which of course is going to be music, and music this week by Harvey Cohen. I believe you mentioned a Cohen composition here. So we mentioned it last week. But this episode won an outstanding Emmy Award for outstanding music direction and composition, specifically here. So, man, I think we can just give our scores now, right? But right off the bat, as you mentioned, we're set in this old timey gritty detective story. And what rings truer than some jazz with some hi-hat and some horns, and we get some flute played in there too, but it's very jazz sounding, sort of that 50s cop show noir sounding, you know, you almost expect this episode to be in black and white based on, you know, but just the facts, nothing but the facts, you know, if you want to go old school there. It's like it's the atmosphere is set perfectly with that with the music style, and that is consistent throughout the entire episode. We do get some breaks here and there. We get a little bit more traditional orchestral themes with the deeper sounding horns, but it's a lot of saxophone, it's a lot of hi-hat, it's a lot of flute, it's a lot of the more jazzy instruments, the bass, you know, the stand-up bass. You get a nice little bass beat coming through there also. So we even get like a very jazzy version of the Batman theme, the Shirley Walker Batman plays, which I was absolutely over the moon about. But I felt like, based on, I mean,
this episode itself is worth watching just for the music. Like, if you want to just go watch a good episode that has great music, and mm-hmm. you want to kind of, this is, I think, probably arguably in the top five for the best music themes for the entire series here. So I had no choice but to give this a perfect 10 out of 10.
Yeah, and I gave it the exact same score, not surprisingly. It's funny because throughout the episode, they're bringing in the saxophone and flute, and really from the opening title card, the theme kicks in, and it was like, ah, of course, that's because you're one of those ones when you see that, wow, there's so many great soundtracks. What made this one so special? And it's so unique. There's no other episode in the whole, you know, Batman the Animated Series catalog and the whole DCAU catalog That's quite like this one. And the fact that, of course, they had an actual live orchestra playing the soundtrack is a big part of that too, I'm sure. But yeah, to me, it's like as much fun as that is, the notes you mentioned, like, you know, that we get the Batman theme all jazzed up at one point, and then when that second fight, the Vinny the Shark fight, happens in the car warehouse or whatever. And it's just like, oh man, the drums start running so fast and the tempo picks up and you get the big horns, the brass section just kicks into overdrive and you get that really great big band fight music. It's fantastic. It's like nothing that I think we've ever covered on this show. As many cool genre episodes as we've talked about, obviously like The Forgotten comes to mind, and I think The Man Who Killed Batman, there's a lot of like organ in that one. Like, there's been a lot of great musical episodes. I think we've talked about this before. A future bonus episode will no doubt be probably dedicated just solely to some of our favorite themes and episode soundtracks. But this one really, it just became immediately apparent because of how unique it was, why it would get the nomination. And then the variations on the jazz, it's not just the horns, the way it, you know, the kind of rapid tempo changes and everything that you would associate with jazz music, especially that era of, you know, big band swing jazz music. So tremendous. And it's just a remarkable job by Mr. Cohen there.
Yeah. And you know what? The only other one that I can think of that has like that jazzy beat to it is Read My Lips, this episode doesn't sound anything like that episode. Like, that is a very like classically jazz, like I don't know how to describe it. It just, that feels more like big band jazz. This has more of the whiny, like, you know, screaming saxophone that you would get in those, you know, in a classic detective story. Like you said, would it be out of place to hear a voiceover from the detective telling the story about what they're experiencing? So I love that it's using maybe a similar style to an episode that also had an incredible soundtrack like that, that used a more classically jazzed influenced soundtrack, but it's completely its own thing. And it's not even comparable. Like it's not even close. Mm-hmm. It's its own style, it's its own genre. So it's the case of taking the same or similar instruments and you get a completely different sound and atmosphere created for the episode. So well worth checking this one out. Also checking out, if you can track down the Batman, the Animated Series soundtrack, listening to some of these tracks in isolation is good. Some of the music is on streaming services. I know some of the albums, they're not complete, but you might be able to get some of that on streaming services or check out YouTube. But those are well worth checking out for a full appreciation of Mr. Cohen's work for this episode.
Absolutely.
All right, Liam, let's bring it home here with our final category of the day, which of course is going to be our voice acting. Not a huge cast this week because we have like a handful of people that are featured for the entire episode here, and two major players are our normal series regulars. But let's talk about some of the other players here and talk about our series regulars on this week's voice cast.
Absolutely. So some smaller roles here, but again, I think it really adds to the texture of the episode. We have Leanne Shermer as Montoya once again. She's really only in the one scene, or at least she only gets most of her dialogue in one scene. But again, I just love, it's going to be a story about how all of these actors play off Robert Costanza, obviously. But you know, her, Leanne Shermer as Montoya, and as mentioned, the Marie Devon. This might be the episode where she's gotten the most to do, besides just be on the TV screen and throw out exposition for our episodes most of the time. So seeing her actually get to, again, just be a character, and us being dropped into the middle of this Bullock Gleason sort of rivalry is so much fun. So I enjoy both of those, both Miss Shermer and Miss Devon and their minor roles and how they worked off of the Bullock character.
Yeah, as I mentioned, Miss Shermer in the one scene where she's trying to like be friendly to Bullock, and he's just being such a dismissive jerk, like not even trying to make small talk with her, and just sort of being sort of dismissive about the holidays. And then Miss Devon, as you mentioned, she has a feature role in the other famous Batman Christmas episode, also in Christmas with the Joker, and then maybe the one episode with. Is it the episode with a ninja? The second episode, Day of the Samurai.
It's Night of the Ninja, actually.
Night of the Ninja. Okay. All right. So we have like three episodes where she's like really really featured here in the ones that we've covered so far. So we this is the one where she gets to show the most sort of dynamic, you know, version of this character. There's a little more emotion, as you said, not just. Being completely irritated and fed up with Bullock when she walks in on him in her office, and being completely just over him to the point where she does not wish him well on his way out, even after he might be facing certain death soon. So yeah, both minor parts, but both fun interactions with Mr. Bullock.
Absolutely there. And then of course we have Jeffrey Jones, playing both Nivens and Vinny the Shark, so he's both of the chief antagonists of this episode. Of course, Mr. Jones has a tremendous, a very prolific career. Things like Hunt for Red October, the TV series Deadwood, using Ferris Bueller's Day Off, just to name a few. Really fantastic actor, and obviously gets to show range, because not only is he playing this, you know, very deep voice tough guy mobster in Vinny the Shark, who, you know, first he has the scene where he gets to be all menacing as he's threatening Bullock and Batman, but then at the next scene when he's being interrogated and Bullock's, you know, grabbing him by the lapels and yelling at him, and he's yelling back, like he's really fun there. And then really it's only two scenes, but getting to play this sniveling weird little man who is just on his last on his last nerve because of just what living in close proximity to Harvey Bullock has done to him. Great dual role from our guest cast here. I thought he did just a tremendous job, did Mr. Jones this week.
Yeah, both roles are extremely different. One's more of a cool, calm, calculated, and ready to happy to take the opportunity to destroy his nemesis in Bullock, but sort of pleasantly happy. And then his annoyance later on is he's being shaken down and insisting that he has no idea what Bullock is talking about when it comes to these death threats. But then, as you mentioned, the sniveling sort of nervously insane character of Nivens as Bullock, you know, they set it up perfectly, because you see him as a almost literal doormat as Bullock threatens to wipe his shoes on him in the first scene there. But he shows his emotion and his quick temper as Bullock is walking up, and he starts hollering at him, and then we get the insanity portion of that towards the end there, as he sort of begins maniacally laughing, and, you know, as he screams that no jury would have convicted him for killing Bullock because he's a terrible tenant. So yeah, it's an interesting dual role for him. And Nivens is definitely the one with, I think, more of a dimension to the character, because of the despite the fact not having that many lines, but certainly a little bit more fun with that character. But a fine dual role for this actor.
Absolutely. And then as mentioned, Cal, really our only other two voices to talk about. Well, we have three. We do have Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. as Alfred, just for one scene, although he does get to take a line that's almost direct directly lifted from the comic, but he refers to Bullock as looking like an unmade bed.
So good. I had that written down. So good.
Yeah, it's so, so funny. And, you know, top notch delivery, unsurprisingly, by Mr. Zimbalist there. But yeah, love that little bit there from him. And then, of course, we have, you know, Kevin Conroy's Batman kind of playing a backseat here in a way to what is, and not in a bad way necessarily, but is it's the Robert Costanza show. It's the Harvey Bullock show. And Mr. Costanza, I think more than rises to the occasion here. He's there's no, you know, it doesn't feel like a different character. I feel like sometimes when there's a background character suddenly gets a starring role, you have to kind of tweak things a little bit. But again, like so much of this episode is driving home that he's just this slovenly, you know, hard-headed guy who just pisses everyone off that meets him. And you would think then by the end of the episode, you're almost rooting for him to get to get the axe. But no, it's he's so funny in the role at the same time that it ends up working out very well. And him playing off, as said, Miss Devon as Summer Gleason and Miss Shermer as Montoya is fantastic as well as our villains of the piece here. But yeah, Mr. Costanza, not surprisingly, but getting one of his first big starring roles other than, I guess, Vendetta, the first Killer Croc episode, is probably the other one where he's gotten the most to do. Yeah, he's fantastic, perhaps not surprisingly.
Yeah, not surprisingly at all. He's been dynamic since the very beginning. Clearly, is the voice of this character. It's definitely the voice of this character for me. It's instantly recognizable. Instantly, it fits because it's a cartoon, and his voice is very cartoony in the way that he delivers the lines. But it doesn't come across as a Saturday morning cartoon villain, or like, you know, the things that we've said before. It's not over the top to the point where it's eye rollingly bad. It's dynamic. It creates depth to the character. It's animated, pun intended. There's so much to it, and he has so many different scenes here to play off of these various different people. And he's such a large dynamic personality that it makes sense that he kind of interacts with these people that are a little bit, the voices are a little bit on the downbeat. They're downplayed. They're smaller. They're not as big. They're not as dynamic. They're not as loud. So him being the loudest person in the room, with the exception of maybe when he goes up against Batman. But even then, Batman's soft, you know, Kevin Conroy's a beautiful, soft, calm Batman voice for the most part, I would say, except for when he's asking him if he's on the take. And then I love the line where immediately after he asks him if he's on the take, a Bullock tries to say that, we're not all that different. You know, he understands mm-hmm. about bending rules. We're not all that different. And Batman responds very calmly, "We're on the same side, but we're not the same." It's just setting it apart. Batman is our hero. Batman is not a police officer. He doesn't have the same rules to follow that Bullock does. Batman plays within his rules that he's set for his role, but they're not the same person. They're not at all the same here. So unsurprisingly, I think the best parts of the episode are when Mr. Costanza and the late great Kevin Conroy have these interactions, you know, from the beginning, from that first scene on the roof to the scenes later on in Bullock's apartment. And then even the scene that they have riding in the Batmobile together is quite entertaining and fun.
Yes.
There's some comedy thrown in there. And then the final scene where we get the reveal and Batman finally gets this thank you from Bullock is really, really good. It's all really strong. It's all really good voice actors doing really good voice acting. It's, you know, two of the main characters and the main cast here, including Kevin Conroy with a tremendous performance. So I felt like based on everybody's performance this week, had no choice but to give it a perfect 10.
And once again, we are on the same page, my friend. Yes, I gave it a 10 as well. I don't know how I could not have, given how much we've gushed over everybody's performances. big fan of when after just being mouthed off to by Bullock, you know, time and time again, not just in this episode, but across the whole series, when Batman just grabs him by the lapels, the scruff of his jacket, and just says, "Do you want to live, Bullock?"
So good.
Pay attention. Like, it's just tremendous. Not breaking news, but we would be remiss not to mention that this is the first episode of this series we've covered since Kevin's passing. So I think maybe it was a little extra emotional for that reason. Yeah. You know, his birthday just having passed, and you know, getting towards the holidays, I think it's always a time for reflection. But playing off of each other. And finally, after all of these episodes of tension, you know, when we looked back at On Leather Wings back in October with James from Watchtower Database, we talked about how, you know, Gordon and Bullock in that first episode really feel like well-rounded actual people. They aren't just there to be, you know, kind of a minor stereotype where he's fat and the other guy's old and they're just, you know, these bumbling cops. It's not like the, you know, Gordon and Chief O'Hara in the 60s show or something. They feel like real characters. So getting to see an episode that really focused on Bullock and Batman's relationship with Bullock and all of that, and Batman's commitment to helping this guy, even though, you know, he continually rubs him the wrong way, I think it's great. And Mr. Conroy and Mr. Costanza just really brought it to another level. So fantastic work all around.
Yeah, agreed. All right, Liam. Well, that will bring us to our final scores for this week's episode as we begin to wrap things up. Totaling everything up this week, I end up with an incredibly strong and top pick worthy 36 out of 40. What about you?
Yeah, I think we only differed in one category and I was a point higher. So I got us to a 37 out of 40 for my final score. It's funny because if you talk about rewatchability, I think this is an easy thumbs up just because of how great of an episode it is. It doesn't have a lot of ties that continue on in the series. So if you're looking for continuity important episodes, it's not going to be one, but I think you get a thumbs up just for God's sake, it won an Emmy. Like you can't skip this one. I don't think if you're watching for the first time or just rewatching the important ones, I think this gets at least one thumb up for rewatchability for that.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Wholeheartedly agree. It's a classic episode. It's fun. It's a good story. Hey, it's a holiday episode, whether you want to say it or not. It takes place between Christmas and New Year's. It's a holiday season episode. It's worth putting on, even if they don't. The only mentions are the fact that it's the week between Christmas and New Year's, and there's one shot of a family taking some Christmas decorations down. Say what you will, but if you're going to claim Batman Returns or Die Hard as a Christmas movie, then by God, so is A Bullet for Bullock. It's a Christmas episode.
I agree.
So, I give this one, I dare say, give this one two thumbs up for rewatchability. It's a good, strong episode. Great story. It's, as you mentioned, it's an Emmy award winning, you know, episode. Why not give it that double thumbs up? It's well worth a watch. And I think it's one that would be enjoyable for people coming in blind and not having ever seen a Batman, the Animated Series episode, or people that kind of understand the Batman dynamic a little bit and are just looking for a good Batman, the Animated Series episode. So agree.
Absolutely.
All right, Liam. Well, thank you everybody for tuning in this week. We are so thankful. As we mentioned, it's the original recording of this episode, it's the holiday season, and we are so thankful, so much to be grateful for and so much to be thankful for. We are absolutely thankful for each and every one of our listeners and people that tune in on a weekly basis to listen to us talk about these episodes. Mm-hmm. As we mentioned last week, we will not be having a new episode next week. We will be foregoing that and allowing not only ourselves a week off, a break for the holiday, but also an encouragement to you and yours to spend time with your family, you know, hang out with your friends or your family, and remember you're not alone. You know, this holidays can be
a rough time of year for a lot of people, and maybe not a joyous time, but you know, that's why we encourage people to reach out to us, tweet us at DCAU Review, send us a DM on Instagram. You know, we love talking with you. Thank you so much for spending this year with us and spending some part of your holiday season with us. But yeah, remember, you're never alone. There are people out there that care about you. Liam and I care about you as listeners, and are thankful for any time that you've spent listening to us. And hopefully we can continue to give you some great content in the new year. We will have one final episode before the end of the year. As Liam mentioned, New Year's Eve will be our official five-year anniversary. And Liam, we will be we'll actually be taking a look back at the year 2022 in full before we turn that number over to a three.
That's right. We're going to talk about the midterms. We're going to talk about no. We're not going to.
Nope.
We're going to talk about Truth Social and all the stuff going on over there. We're going to talk about our favorite things and maybe our least favorite things that we reviewed all year long in 2022 across our 12 months of reviews, and probably look at some of our bonus episodes that we did as well, and maybe what we're looking forward to in the new year as well. Looking forward to that. And as we reach towards the end there, again, as Cal said, appreciate everybody who does reach out and lets us know their thoughts on our episodes and the episodes that we're reviewing. You know, we've talked about it. We've had more people this year kind of give their own scores, which I really love. I really love to see that. So I love people in the format and coming up with their own reasoning for why they might have scored something higher or lower than we did. So love to hear that and love to see that feedback. If you don't feel comfortable posting it publicly on our Instagram or Twitter, DMs are also open, so you can share your thoughts privately if you prefer to do it that way. But yeah, thanks everybody for listening, and looking forward the new year. Never mind. I was going to say it can't get any worse. I'm not so brave as to make a sweeping declaration like that. At least we can say, I think the year will be even better for our show, if nothing else.
Hey, absolutely. I'm a glass half full kind of guy. The best is yet to come for us and for everybody. So thank you again for tuning in. And hey, you know what? Check the podcast feed. As we said, we won't have a standard episode next week, but you never know what might show up under your podcast Christmas tree this week. Perhaps a special bonus episode, but if not, we will see you guys on New Year's Eve 2022. Thank you again for tuning in, and don't forget, of course, if you want to support the podcast, you can do so by subscribing to us on your favorite podcast apps. You can also leave a review. That helps us out. That would be a great Christmas or holiday gift for us. A Hanukkah gift for us would be a nice 5-star review. You know, leave it on your favorite podcast app. If it lets you leave a little blurb about what you like about us, that's another great gift you can leave us. You can also support the podcast directly, as several very lovely, generous people do, via the link on our anchor.fm podcast. You can also subscribe to us, of course, on the YouTube channel, youtube.com/thepodtower. Thank you, everybody. Hope to see you at before the new year. And but until then, I'm Cal.
And I'm Liam.
And we will talk to you on the next episode of the DCAU Review.
Bye-bye.
Happy holidays.